And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. And we're asking the question on this edition of the Generations program, is this the end of the American dream? And as you know, friends, I've written a book called The Second Mayflower. I think that we can do it one more time. America's a great concept. Hey, why not try it one more time? Is my basic premise and a premise for this program. But we're in tough times today. Economically, sociologically, demographically, epistemologically, things are not going in the right direction. And we're going to deal with some of the negative stuff, but the macro issues eventually push us back to the micro solutions. So we need to be understanding the times. And so to talk about this, I've asked Michael Snyder to join me on the radio broadcast from economicscollapseblog.com, also endoftheamericandream.com. Michael has got some excellent stuff online that you need to keep up with from time to time. Endoftheamericandream.com is his website. Michael Snyder, welcome to our radio program.
Thank you. It's a real privilege to be on this show, and I'm excited to talk about some of these things. We're really in a time of crisis in this country, and we need to spread the word and wake people up.
Yes, we do, and I certainly resonated to some of your websites. I caught just this last weekend, Michael. You've got some important articles, and you keep up to date with what's going on. Why don't you give us the big picture right now, if you can? You've been full-time blogging for a while. And where are we? Where is America today?
Well, we are headed for a terrible financial collapse. Our national debt keeps exploding. It's almost reached $16 trillion. It's increasing at the rate of about $150 million an hour. That's $150 million that the Obama administration, that the U.S. Congress is stealing from our children and our grandchildren every single hour. It's the biggest debt bubble in the history of the world. They keep running up all of this debt. Meanwhile, our economic situation continues to deteriorate. We've got 46 million Americans on food stamps today. You know, you look at the college graduates coming out, there's not enough jobs for them. In fact, 53% of all college graduates with a bachelor's degree under the age of 25 are either unemployed or underemployed, so there's not nearly enough jobs. We're rapidly approaching an economic cliff, an economic disaster. And sadly, most Americans don't realize what's coming.
Yeah, and if you think that Europe is in trouble, you should look at America. I think I calculated the per capita debt of the federal government in comparison with the European Union nations and found that the American debt was twice the debt per capita as the European Union nations. So you think Europe's in trouble, you ought to take a look at the United States. We do have a big economy. We've got some momentum to move us forward, but we're going in the wrong direction. Mike, I looked at that chart on your website just this afternoon. It's the debt chart for the federal government of the United States. And what I saw, well, first of all, $1.6 trillion of additional debt in just the last, 15, 16 months. But the chart was interesting. What we get is three orders of exponential increases since 1965. And I was just kind of watching that chart that you have on the thing. And you have a couple of different increases. You have an increase of about 1980 in the 1980s, early 1980s. You had the Reagan debt increases, and then the second major increase occurred in 2000 with George W. Bush, and then the third major increase occurred in 2006 with George W. Bush, and of course Obama has just continued that legacy for the last 3 to 4 years as well. What you get is the debt right now. It looks like on the chart it's almost going straight up. You know, that exponent is just going straight up. It's scary.
Oh, absolutely, and that's the case. And the sad thing is, if you remember back in 2010, you know, the Tea Party pretty much dominated the election. It was just an incredible victory for the Republicans. In fact, on election night 2010, more House seats changed hands than in any other election since 1948. So there was this great mandate to stop government debt, to stop the out-of-control spending. But since that time, we've seen government debt since the Republicans took control and since they came to started making budget agreements, the national debt has increased by $1.6 trillion more dollars. And that could not happen without the approval of the Republican Party because they control the House of Representatives. And the House of Representatives, not a single penny of federal money can be spent without the House of Representatives. So the Republican Party is complicit in this. Mm-hmm. You know, we expect the Democrats to spend money like it's going out of style. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the Republicans are also doing it. It's hand in hand, destroying the future of our nation.
Michael, why? Why won't anybody reverse this trend? Why doesn't anybody want to save the country? What's wrong with these Republicans?
Well, a big thing is that if they do cut back on government spending, because when the government spends money, even if they spend it on silly things, it gets into the pockets of people, and they use it to pay their mortgage, to buy food, to buy clothes, to go to the stores, et cetera, et cetera. So right now, every year we've got more than $1 trillion that shouldn't be going into our economy that's going into our economy. It's fueling this debt-fueled prosperity that we're enjoying. And so our politicians know that all this debt makes our economy look better than it should be.
Mm.
And they know that if suddenly, say, the federal government went to a balanced budget, they suck $1 trillion out of the economy all of a sudden. Well, that's going to make unemployment go up. It's going to, cause economic activity to really slow down, and it's going to make them look bad and hurt their chances in the next election.
Yeah.
So no president and Congress, they don't want to hurt their re-election chances, so they want the economy to continue to look good.
So no one really wants to go through any short-term pain in order to salvage the economy. They're just going to kick the can down the road, and it's really going to hurt. It's really going to hurt. I mean, it's really, really, really going to hurt in the next 20 years if somebody doesn't do something now. But nobody really wants to go through short-term pain for some long-term gain. It's just that's just not what America wants, I guess, at this point. Or at least these Republican leaders don't really want to risk re-election on saving the republic.
Oh, it's very true. No one wants to see their government benefits cut back, and when people really, start talking about, okay, we need to do something serious about some of these federal programs, people scream bloody murder, but, we've gotten this social welfare state, which is just completely out of control.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you go back to 1960, social welfare benefits were the equivalent of approximately 10% of all salaries and wages in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Then you fast forward 40 years to the year 2000. In the year 2000, social welfare benefits were roughly the equivalent of approximately 21% of all salaries and wages in the United States. But then just fast forward 12 years later to today, in 2012, social welfare benefits are the equivalent of 35% of all salaries and wages in the United States.
Incredible.
So we've got just this incredibly bloated welfare state that we can't afford, and out of control government spending. But very few of our politicians want to touch it, because the people that are receiving all these benefits just start screaming bloody murder, and they would threaten not to vote for these politicians.
It sounds to me like the citizenry has come down to bread and games, as they did in the Roman Empire at the close of the Roman Empire. And if they don't get the bread and games, they're going to riot in the streets, and so the Senate is going to be pressed to give them more bread and games and more bread and games until the whole thing comes crashing down. That's incredible. What happens when you've got the majority of Americans, 46% of Americans on food stamps, closer now, I think, to 50, 55, 60% of Americans, their medical care is being taken care of by the government. What happens when the majority of Americans are on the dole? What happens then?
Well, we get entire generations which learn to be dependent on the federal government, and they expect the government to take care of them from the cradle to the grave, and we get an entire culture shift where people almost look to the government to solve all their problems, and they look to the government almost as God or taking the place of God.
Yeah.
And we've just seen such an explosion in this. For example, when Barack Obama was first elected, there were 32 million Americans on food stamps, and now there are 46 million
Incredible.
Americans.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible. Yeah, I think almost every single American with a brain knows that at some point you run out of other people's money, and you don't have any more money to spend or to redistribute to anybody else. And I think Americans are getting more and more cynical about the whole process, and yet they don't really want to change their representation in Washington, it seems. I mean, they're cynical, but they don't want to change their representation in Washington at least to this point.
Oh, and it's very true. And, even, for example, the Republican Party, which is supposed to stand for fiscal conservatism, they're nominating Mitt Romney, who's already said he does not plan to balance the budget his first year. He says he's not going to suck $1 trillion out of the economy. And so he's just going to continue the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and most Americans, they look around and they think, well, things are still pretty good. Things aren't that bad. But that's the thing. When you're, you know, for those of us that have ever run up credit card debt, it can be a lot of fun to run up credit card debt to the limit to spend money that you don't have. But eventually a day of reckoning comes and debt always catches up with you. And so on an individual level, I'm always encouraging people to get out of debt. But on the national level, this is going to be incredibly painful, no matter how it plays out eventually.
The piper is invoiced. That's right, friends. At some point, you've got to pay the piper. And what are all these invoices in my basket here? Must be the piper. That's right. The piper is invoiced. And at some point, you've got to pay him. And America will have to pay. Yeah, we're the strongest economy in the world, but won't remain that for very long. What happens to the American dream, Michael?
That's a very good question. Today we're seeing the middle class being destroyed like never before. For example, 2010, the last year we have full year, we have numbers for 2.6 million more Americans fell into poverty. That was the largest increase that we have ever seen before.
Wow.
And what we've seen over the past 10, 20, 30 years, we've started seeing a fundamental shift where we've been seeing millions of jobs being sent out of the country. In 2010 alone, we saw an average of 23 manufacturing facilities per day being shut down in the United States. And overall, since 2001, we've seen about 56,000 manufacturing facilities shut down in this country. Our economic infrastructure is being shredded. You know, meanwhile, shiny new factories are going up all over China. You know, we're not producing like we used to. You know, we're not creating wealth. We're consuming far more wealth than we're creating. Our ability to create wealth is declining at the same time that we're piling up these debts, not only the federal debt, but on an individual level, on a business, corporate, state government, local government. We've created this gigantic debt bubble at the same time that our underlying economic fundamentals are rotting and deteriorating.
You know, I think a lot of folks are hoping that there's some solution in the near future. What it does for me is it pushes me back to micro solutions, something we talked about off air. You can't just fix Washington overnight. We're not going to be able to do that. What can the average person do? What do you tell the average person? Hey, we got to do something. This place looks hopeless, but let's do something. What do you tell them?
Oh, absolutely. What I encourage people to do is to focus on solutions on an individual or a family level, because there's this great storm that's coming on the horizon. So, and people need to get prepared. And what I encourage people to do is to focus on what they can do to become more independent of the system. Mm-hmm. And that there are several ways you can do that. For example, you know, you want to get out of debt, because if you're in debt, you're essentially a servant to the financial system. Another thing I encourage people to do is, even if they have a job right now, take a look at what you can do to start a small business on the side. That's what my wife and I did. We started something on the side. Eventually, it became a full-time business. Mm. But if you have a small business, no one can fire you from that. And as we saw in the last recession, you know, if you have a job, even a good job, you can lose that at any time. Even today, I saw an article, Goldman Sachs is laying off people. So, you know, it doesn't matter how big or how successful the business is, you can lose your job at any time. So you want to start developing something of your own that you can't be taken away from you. You know, then I always encourage other people to do things like grow a garden, you know. Oftentimes when you go to the grocery store, fruits and vegetables, those type of things are the most expensive in the grocery store. But if you start to grow some of your own food, that makes you more independent, you know, and it'll also save you some money at the grocery store. So there's a whole host of things that people can do to try to become more independent, to try to shelter for the storm. And one of the key things I'm recommending for people to do is to put aside at least 6 months, but preferably a year of expenses for your bills in case you do lose your job. If something happens, you're not going to be in the same position as millions of Americans were in the last economic crisis we saw back in 2008, where suddenly millions of Americans lost their jobs and they didn't have an income, so they lost their home because they couldn't pay the mortgage, and then all of a sudden they're out on the street. people need to start storing up for what's ahead.
You sound like you're going through a litany of the last 25 recorded programs of this radio broadcast as you went through all these possible solutions. And really, you're not hopeless, are you? I mean, you really believe there's hope for the future. It's just we're going to have to go through some challenging times in the near future.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even in the midst of the chaos that's coming, I believe that those who prepare, those who take positive steps now, they can be greatly blessed in the middle of all the chaos. And, you know, I do try to be a watchman on the wall and warn people what's coming so that they can prepare and so that, you know, when times are the darkest, that's when the greatest light is needed. That's when the greatest heroes are needed.
Mm.
So people can let the times that are coming destroy them, or instead they can decide that they can make it the greatest adventure of their lives.
And something you mentioned earlier, stop treating government like God. Stop trusting in government as if it's going to save you from all of your problems. There is a God, and you ought to trust in Him. He created heaven and earth, and He sustains us by the word of His power. So trust the right God. Turn to the right God. But please do not think of government as God. And I think that's a basic lesson for a lot of folks out there.
Oh, absolutely. And spiritual preparation is key for the times ahead, too, to get closer to God than you ever have been before.
Mm-hmm.
And the government's not going to rescue you. The government's not going to save you. You know, just look at what happened after Hurricane Katrina and the government response to that. And now imagine a big problem on the national level, a crisis on the national level. You know, don't put your trust in government.
Yeah. Well, let's hit one more story that you covered on the front of your blog, I think as of yesterday or about a week ago, and that is the curtailment of the freedom of speech. This is one of the most shocking stories I have seen, Michael, in a long time. I was shocked. I mean, I have seen a little bit of persecution of people, you know, out on sidewalks trying to get the word out in the midst of a Muslim fuss festival in Detroit. Or, you know, you've seen Christians out there passing out tracts, getting in trouble somewhere out there. But here we have a situation in Wisconsin where a pastor was talking about the book of Proverbs, evidently using the rod and these sorts of things. And he is up for 2 years in prison now. In Madison, Wisconsin, for saying the wrong thing and offending a judge, evidently.
Yeah, and what makes this case different is that he was not put into prison for any spanking that he did or for any physical action he took.
Yeah.
He was put in, he was sentenced just for his speech, just for what he was teaching from the Bible, his members of his congregation to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what shocked me is that all of a sudden now we're criminalizing speech, and not only that, criminalizing speech from the pulpit.
Yeah. Now, it may be something that you and I or somebody else might not agree with. I mean, some of us might think it'd be better to spank with a hand. It might be better not to spank at all, put them in the corner. I mean, we have a lot of different perspectives on child training, okay? But now here's a guy who's got a perspective on child training. He gets up in front of people somewhere in the United States of America, and somebody disagrees with him, and now he's up for 2 years in prison in Wisconsin. Has this ever happened anywhere else? In all of your coverage of stories across America and sort of abridgments of freedoms we've seen over the last, say, 30, 40 years, have you ever recalled anything quite close to this?
No, I've never heard of anyone, any prosecutors taking this step before. I've heard in different parts of the United States, particularly the very liberal areas, where they can now consider spanking to be child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
They'll send the CPS workers in on you if they hear that you spank your child. But I've never heard of them going after a minister who is just preaching that people should spank their children. Now, you know, I don't agree with everything that this particular minister said, certainly not. You know, I have my differences of opinion.
Yeah.
But what disturbed me was they attacked him for, and they sentenced him to prison simply for what he said, not for anything else.
Incredible. Incredible. You also mentioned the New York State government is attempting to pass a measure in the Senate and Assembly, and apparently they're trying to pass this thing that would outlaw all mean-spirited and baseless political attacks. which, you know, that's about 80% of politicking in America, I think. There's a lot of people in prison after this one gets through the New York State Assembly.
Oh, absolutely. And it has a chilling effect on people like me that are bloggers, that are, you know, independent of the mainstream media. We're trying to tell the truth out there and present hard-hitting stories and present things the way they really are. And all of a sudden, you know, you see these attacks on free speech. You know, you see the, you know, very vague laws being passed by the New York State government saying, well, you know, any type of mean-spirited or, you know, things of this nature. You know, it's kind of chilling because it's,
wow.
They say, well, could they use such a law to eventually come after me?
Can you say USSA, the United Socialist States of America? This sounds like communism. Sounds like the Nazis. You know, there's a law passed in Colorado about 4 years ago, SB 200. Never forget this law, where they were outlawing any reference to homosexuality that might be perceived as objectionable by homosexuals. If anything was said that could be perceived as objectionable to homosexuals, that person who said whatever they said would be up for 1 year in prison here in the state of Colorado. It seems to me that we've got kind of this Nazi fascist movement in America that's trying to limit the freedom of speech based upon lifestyle, based upon personal political opinions, based upon this or that. And this is chilling. This is First Amendment stuff, seems to me. I can't imagine this stuff would really survive a Supreme Court challenge. What's your take on that?
Unfortunately, these days, you never know what the courts are going to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went to law school. I practiced law for a number of years. And, you know, these days, it's not predictable. You know, it seems pretty clear to me what the Constitution says. Unfortunately, you know, the courts are going kind of crazy. And then, you know, you probably heard about the situation out in California recently where a bill was introduced which would completely ban and outlaw all counseling of children under the age of 18, any type of psychological counseling that would encourage them to leave the homosexual lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this kind of political correctness ran just absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, eventually they're going to use that as witch hunts against those who believe in biblical Christianity.
Yeah, I don't know how much longer guys like you and I are going to survive on the internet if we see laws like this trying to curtail the dissemination of information that might be perceived as unwelcome to politicos, to homosexuals, to judges who happen to think this form of child training is better than that form of child training. This is scary stuff. And, you know, I think it gets us back to the political battles. It's important that we have good people placed in office still to this point. We're not saying don't vote. We're saying get out there still and let's get some people with good sense in office, guys who will just stand against this crazy infringement of our freedom to speak.
Oh, absolutely. We need to be very careful and hold the politicians accountable because our liberties, our freedoms are being attacked a little bit more every day. That's why I never run out of material to write about. And I'm constantly writing about the Big Brother intrusion in our lives, the attacks on our free speech and all of those things to help bring awareness. And we do need people in office and positions of power who can stand up for us before it's too late. Because once our freedoms are gone, they're going to be incredibly difficult to get back.
And boy, as we interview potential candidates for House seats or congressional seats, we need to ask them the basic questions. I mean, first of all, we got to make sure they're not the weenie little socialists that are out there just to seek more government solutions to every single nitpicky little problem that we can come up with. We got to make sure that's not the candidate we're getting behind. We're getting behind the candidate that understands the real issues with this country. And that is, we are going for economic disaster unless somebody does something and starts cutting budgets right and left. And we need to ask them if they are willing to preserve our freedom to speak, our freedoms, our freedom to worship, our freedom to congregate, our freedom to homeschool our children, our freedom. Yeah, I think we got to be asking the basic questions. Are you willing to lay your life down for my right to speak what I think the Bible says in a public forum somewhere? And are you willing to go the distance, to fight for my freedoms in this area or that area. We need to ask these guys the tough questions, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. Or else we're going to end up just like Canada. If you look just north of the border, and many of your listeners probably heard about this story recently, there was a high school student that was suspended for school for an entire week for simply wearing a T-shirt that said, "Life is wasted without Jesus." It just said those five words. And so he was sent home for a week, and then he was told if he ever tried to wear that shirt again, he would be suspended for the rest of the year.
Wow. Incredible. Incredible. Yeah, I think Canada is a little further down the pike than we are. There was an Alberta law that was attempted this year, and it threatened homeschooling in Alberta, which, by the way, is the largest homeschool population in Canada, right there in Alberta. And they were trying to get a requirement for homeschoolers in the province of Alberta to indoctrinate their children in a specific viewpoint concerning homosexuality. You'll never guess what that viewpoint is, but they were going to do what they could to impose this requirement on every single family, every single homeschool in the state of Alberta, which would, of course, mean mandatory state visits by some official who would make sure that your children were properly instructed in how to perform sodomy and so forth in the homes in Alberta. And there were people that came up in arms against that. Fortunately, some 2,000 people surrounded the Capitol, and they were able to just barely stop that law from being passed there at the Capitol in Alberta. So, you know, Alberta has and Canada has its own battles. We've got our battles, and I think it's important for us to continue to stay in the game. And I think you're in the game, aren't you?
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. And, you know, I went to public schools all of my life, you know, all through high school, all through college, et cetera, et cetera. But I would never recommend for any parents to send their kids to these public schools today. They have truly become indoctrination centers, mm-hmm. and they've become, they're teaching our kids how to live basically in a totalitarian prison grid. You know, you've got kids being arrested today in American schools for spraying perfume on their neck, for burping in class. The police come in and you've got police tasering kids.
Uh-huh.
I've written about quite a few of these things extensively, but it's like our public schools are going absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm. They're just programming them how to live in a totalitarian state, the 1984 Orwellian state. And I think the schools are sort of the belly of the beast, because that's where it all begins. If we can stop socialism in education, then we might have a shot at having a free nation in the year 2030 or the year 2040. So that's one reason why we continually get back to the education battles, because they are critical for the strategy of retaining a free nation. Well, Michael, we're out of time, but man, it's been good catching up with you. Can we get back with you from time to time?
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. I very much enjoyed being on the show.
Okay, very good. And friends, it's endoftheamericandream.com or economiccollapseblog.com for Michael Snyder's work. Thanks again, Michael. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's good to get another perspective on this radio program from folks who are as concerned as we are about the future of this nation. And let me encourage you to continue to get behind our radio broadcast. One way you can do it is by getting our book, The Second Mayflower, which pretty much synopsizes the challenge before us. And the vision for the future, for our children and grandchildren. I wrote the book in 1993 and have rewritten it twice since then. It's a hardback version available now at our website, kevinswanson.com. You can also support our radio program. We're in our support drive right now on the radio broadcast and encouraging others to get behind the program. We need about 100 people to support the program to keep us on the air for a given year, and we're not quite there. So we would like to ask you, if you would like to support the program, to just go to generationsradio.com and hit donate today. We're asking for $10 a month, or $20, or $40, or $50, or $100 a month, whatever seems right and appropriate to support our little effort here. Again, support our program at generationsradio.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.
I have always felt that doubt was the beginning of wisdom, and the fear of God was the end of wisdom.
Clarence? Darrow.
The only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing.
Socrates.
Belief is the death of intelligence.
Robert Anton Wilson.
If thou trusteth to the book called the Scriptures, thou trusteth to the rotten staff of fables and falsehood.
Thomas Paine.
Faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Mark Twain.
Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered.
God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight.
God.
The fool believes his own ideas to be wisdom, but those who fear God and search for understanding find true wisdom. To lead your family in the pursuit of godliness, pick up a copy of the Proverbs Study Guide at generationswithvision.com.